puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And it's time once again for Abandoned Manitoba on the Weekend Morning Show, where we say good morning to Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nolan.
So this is one of my favorite episodes that we do on a semi-regular basis. What is on the docket for today?
Updates. You know, when you talk about places that are abandoned, as we do here, things inevitably change. You know, buildings get burned or demolished. Sometimes we learn new information about buildings, even if they're still around, you know, based on new research. So we occasionally update things. And in fact, we have an update that I didn't even anticipate.
So you talk about demolished buildings. You are holding the remnants of said demolition
yes.
in front of you. You brought a brick into studio.
Actually, I didn't bring the brick into the studio. Your producer, Bruce Lawden, did. He found two bricks for me from the Windsor Hotel.
Aha.
Of course, listeners may recall that very long ago, the historic Windsor Hotel from here in downtown Winnipeg was destroyed.
Yes.
And, you know, that's sad, you know, when you lose that kind of history. But, you know, many of us are interested in historic bricks. And so these two bricks that Bruce has brought me are wonderful because they show, for example, where the bricks came from that built this building. In this particular case, they came from a place here in Winnipeg called Alsop's. They manufactured bricks. In fact, they're still in business today, making, among other things, bricks. And so it's interesting to know just a little bit more about the construction history, even though the building's gone.
Yeah. There's even remnants of a paint job on the outside of one
yes.
of these bricks.
Yeah. Bruce was saying he was sorry that he hadn't cleaned the brick off. But in fact, it's the covering that I really think it's important. It preserves some of the original stucco on the outside. You know, listeners may recall the signs on the outside, you know, showing, you know, jazz and so on.
Mm.
Well, this brick has a piece of that material sort of still stuck to the outside. So that makes it special.
Incredible. These are, of course, these updates are often listener informed and producer informed in this case. Okay, so let's dive into some of these updates that you've got for us. What have you got up first?
Well, first, I want to just explain to listeners how I find out about these updates. You know, and it would be nice if I knew this from firsthand knowledge. You know, the reality is I have traveled thousands of kilometers around the province, you know, mapping historic places. And, you know, if I had unlimited time and unlimited budget, you know, I would be out all the time traveling around and, you know, finding out updates. But, you know, I just can't do that. So I do depend on people to notify me if something in their community changes. You know, if listeners know about an historic building in their community that has been lost or changed, or there's something new we know about it, I definitely want to know. You know, even here in Winnipeg, you know, I do travel around the city a lot, but, you know, even then I can't know, you know, everything that's going on. So I really do depend on people letting me know. You know, two of the people who I really want to give a special shout out here are people who volunteer for the Manitoba Historical Society. Two very dedicated young men who I think really deserve the credit. Nathan Kramer, Jordan Makachuk. You know, anyone who has visited the Historical Society website has probably encountered their names at some point. They've contributed a vast amount of information, you know, that they've acquired from research at places like the Archives of Manitoba, the City of Winnipeg Archives, the Manitoba Legislative Library, historical newspapers. Oh, wonderful source of information. And a whole lot more. So, you know, collectively with all this help, this is how I can provide these updates periodically.
Appropriate then to give our first tip of the hat to those who are contributing to these updates today. Okay, so I understand that our first update comes from something that we talked about back in April.
Yes, indeed. We talked about the legacy of a man named Max Blankstein. He was Manitoba's first Jewish architect. Many impressive buildings he designed can be found around Winnipeg, but unfortunately, there is now one less than we talked about in May when we first discussed his legacy. The Schreiberg block, which is on Selkirk Avenue, it was demolished back in May. This was a two-story block that contained four residential apartments built in 1914. In the 1930s, it was renamed the Selkirk Apartments, and in the 1940s, the Anthony Apartments. So, you know, not a maybe a really important building, you know, but certainly one of the many early 20th century apartment blocks that really, I think, distinguish Winnipeg, because Winnipeg, I think, has more early 20th century apartment blocks than virtually any city in Canada.
As someone who used to live in one of those apartment blocks designed by Max Blankstein, the Jesse Block over in Crescentwood, I'm sorry to hear that another one of those buildings is gone.
That's right.
Yeah, so okay, then back in March, we're heading out of the city, I understand, for our next update to Brandon.
Yes, indeed. That we talked about Brandon businessman Barney Mollo and his role in bringing fine dining, fast food, and professional sports, hockey and baseball, to the Wheat City. Now, the last vestige of Barney's influence on Brandon was his motel that he built in 1964 at the corner of Highway 10 and the Trans-Canada. Anyone who has traveled past Brandon has probably seen Barney's motel. Well, on a visit to Brandon earlier this year, I noticed that the motel was closed and it was surrounded by a demolition fence. It didn't look too hopeful. And unfortunately, I was right. I was back in Brandon in April, just as the building was being torn down. So the other day I went by again, and the lot is empty. There's a big realty sign advertising it. It's on a really good spot, and I have a feeling that it's you know, going to be occupied fairly soon by some other new structure.
I was going to say, this is a prime corner of real estate for anybody traveling west on the Trans-Canada Highway, and will certainly have a probably a similar occupation to the and a role to the one that Barney's played on that corner.
Yep.
So now we're going way back for your next update. Yeah, what do we got next?
Well, way back in August of 2015, 8 years ago, we told the story about four telecommunications repeater stations in Manitoba. Now, that might not seem familiar to listeners, but if you've ever driven along Highway 2, you may have noticed there are three small brick buildings along the highway, exactly 40 miles apart. And then there's a fourth one just north of Morris. My research at the time had determined that they were built sometime in the 1950s. I wasn't sure exactly when, but the purpose of them was to amplify electrical signals as they passed along wires that made possible long-distance telephone service. You know, the reality is, as you speak into your phone, it's turned into an electrical signal, it's sent down a wire, and gradually that signal deteriorates the further it goes. So every so often, you got to boost it up again so that the signal goes far. Well, these buildings made that possible. And I know that that's a significant event because my grandmother, for example, remembers fondly when long-distance telephone service came in, made possible by these little buildings. You know, and I based my estimate of their age on the recollections of a now-retired telephone service engineer who had spent time working in them to keep the circuitry operating. Well, 3 months ago, Jordan Makachuk found in a historical newspaper from June 1950 a call for tenders to construct the three buildings on Highway 2. So we know, therefore, that the buildings were constructed in late 1950. My guess was pretty close. But more importantly, I think, we can now add them to a list of buildings designed by a specific architect. We didn't know before who had designed them. We now know it was a fellow named Robert B. Ross, because his name was attached to the tender document. We know also that from the late 1940s to the early 1970s, so several decades, Ross was the chief architect for MTS, and as such, he designed many telephone buildings around Manitoba, including dozens of exchange buildings in towns that enabled local phone service. So the, you know, this is really a useful bit of the telecommunications history of Manitoba.
Fascinating. What did you know about Robert Ross before you discovered that he was the architect of these structures?
Well, I knew that he had built other buildings for the MTS utility, but I didn't know which ones. You know, we had a few here in Winnipeg, for instance, that we knew he had designed, and it seemed logical that given that he was the chief architect, he would probably have designed the others too, but, you know, I won't guess on things. It has to be based on actual, you know, research where it's written down somewhere, and so we had a suspicion that he might have designed these because it was the right time period, But now we know for certain, and that's good.
Okay, so that knowledge is no longer abandoned. It has been found. From electrical waves, Gordon, we now move to the water waves. Uh-huh. And our next update, which is about something that many Manitobans are going to have fond memories of.
That's right. So back in February of 2022, we talked about the ships that plied the Red River from the 1960s to the 2010s. Many people, I think, have fond memories of riding on those ships up and down, you know, just seeing the sights, enjoying, relaxing, partying, you know, meeting people. You know, there was the Paddle Wheel Queen, its smaller sister ship, the Paddle Wheel Princess. There was the River Rouge. There were a couple others as well. But, you know, the three of those ships that I've just named were left to rust away in a side channel of the river at Selkirk, what's called the Selkirk Slough. Mm. In 2016, the Paddle Wheel Queen was demolished and its metal was recycled, so it's gone. The Princess, meanwhile, was badly damaged in a fire in 2017, and the rusty, burned-out hulk was sitting forlornly on the riverbanks when I visited it early last year. However, sometime either in late 2022 or in early 2023, the Paddle Wheel Princess met its end. It was sold as scrap metal, and it's now gone. So what that basically leaves is one former cruise ship, the River Rouge, sitting there at Selkirk. Last time when I was there, it was pretty rusty looking, pretty sad, and I wonder how much longer it'll be there, too. And that era of, you know, traveling the river is perhaps gone forever.
A lot of memories from people's proms or high school graduations. I've heard of even weddings. Wedding parties that took place on that ship. Gordon, I think I remember you answering this question at the time, but maybe to reiterate, what's your fondest memory of going on one of these river cruises?
The things people would throw overboard. sometimes it was inanimate objects like chairs, and then, of course, that didn't make the crew very happy. But occasionally, people got thrown overboard as well when they got a little carried away with some of the libations, you know, and maybe people weren't thinking straight, and over they went.
I see. I seem to remember speaking with the captain and the owner of those boats, and he reiterated some similar stories. So there we go. Now we found the guilty party, maybe. Okay, so moving right along, speaking of those libations, we talked about the Manitoba Refinery building back last September.
We did indeed. It's a building that has always interested me, driving past this what looks like a large concrete skeleton. It actually doesn't really look like a building much. It just looks like some vertical concrete pillars with some flat tops. But, you know, we learned, based on research by Jordan Makachuk, that it, in fact, was the first post-prohibition whiskey distillery in Manitoba that for a few years in the late 1920s, early 1930s, they made whiskey. Well, they made whiskey. They also made gin. But it was a very popular place, I think, for at least a few years. Unfortunately, it did not thrive and eventually was decommissioned in the early 30s. A company from the U.S. came and basically took all the equipment back to the U.S. and reassembled it and continued using it there. But to get that equipment out of the building, they stripped off the walls and left basically the skeleton that had been there originally. And I've always wondered what it looked like when it was originally intact. Well, Jordan found a photo in the historical newspapers that give us some insight of what that exterior of the building looks like, basically confirming what we thought was the reason why this building had been stripped bare as it has been. And it's been sitting empty as a result for the last, well, almost 100 years.
Wow. And it's interesting to note now how whiskey distilling and gin distilling has returned to that part of Winnipeg, to the Exchange District, and how much more streamlined things have become as far as the equipment that is being used. And you don't necessarily need to take all those, to strip away all these walls and to make sure that the equipment can move in a bit more of an efficient way.
Yep. Well, and the distilleries today, because they have more efficient equipment, they don't need the space that they had in that big building on Archibald here in Winnipeg.
Right. Speaking of Archibald Street, we have one more site to talk about, which we first revisited in January of 2016.
Right. There's another one going way, way back when we discussed an odd-shaped building at Reston down in southwestern Manitoba. It was built in 1908, that building in Reston, as an engine house. Basically, it was a maintenance facility for steam locomotives. You know, they had to occasionally clean them out, you know, get them ready to be sent out again. And there were several of these buildings around the province because, of course, that's how transportation was done in the early 20th century. They used trains, and trains, of course, were ran on steam. Well, we thought at the time that I talked here that there were three of these engine houses still standing, the one at Reston, one in Dauphin, and one in the Paw. And it was fairly categorical that I was felt pretty confident that there weren't any more. Well, Jordan proved me wrong.
Oh, look at you, fallible Gordon Goldsboro.
Oh, hey, I'm the first to admit that I don't know everything. That's for darn sure. You know, the reality is there was one other one here in Winnipeg, and that's maybe the embarrassing part, is that I've driven by it many times.
Right in your own backyard.
Well, I think possibly in my defense, the reason I missed it was that it wasn't quite as similar in appearance to the ones in those other places. They looked like sort of pie wedges from above because they would have sort of bays in them where the locomotives would sit to be worked on. This one in Winnipeg is quite a bit smaller, and it isn't sort of pie-shaped. It's actually just rectangular from above, so I think I could be excused for not necessarily recognizing its original function. But yes, there is a building on Archibald that was another one of these engine houses. We now know there were four of them. This one is, smaller. It only had room for two locomotives, and it was a long, narrow building that was built in 1908, the same year that the one in Reston was built. Unfortunately, we don't yet know a lot of information about it. We don't know who built it, for example. We don't know how long it continued to be used for railway purposes. So there is additional research that's going to have to be done, and I'm sure that people like Nathan and Jordan are going to be on the case. In fact, who knows? I might even hear from one of them this afternoon that they have cracked the case, and that's the thing that I find so exciting, is that we're constantly learning new things about the places that we talk about here on Abandoned Manitoba.
Absolutely. Or Bruce Layton's going to bring in another brick from another abandoned site. Who
that's
knows?
Right.
Thank you so much for updating us this week, Gordon. What is up for next weekend?
Well, of course, our listeners are aware that we have a provincial election coming up soon, in which we're going to elect the next cohort of our legislative representatives. Sometimes people choose not to vote because they feel it will not make a difference to the outcome of the election. To illustrate the importance of voting, next week we're going to talk about past Manitoba elections in which the winner was determined by a single vote. You know, and I think our listeners will be surprised at just how many there have been.
All right. History informing civic engagement on Abandoned Manitoba next week. Thank you so much, Gordon. We'll talk to you then.
You're welcome. Talk next week. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.